A group ought to be fully self. The people here have been sober here longer than I have, and to also welcome everyone into this way of sobriety. And I admire those who are here at a women's day that are under 2 years of sobriety. You would never find me in one of these places. Y'all terrified me, and I didn't like them, and I didn't want to like them, and I didn't want you in my life. Because you see, one of the great gifts that I have gotten in sobriety has been the love for other women. And today I surround myself and have surrounded myself with really great women, and y'all are no longer the enemy. You are my friends. So I thank Angela and the committee and everyone involved with inviting me. I really feel very honored to open your day of bonding here that we've got. There's three things I want to tell you about me, because these are the three most important things in my life, and without these three things in my life, I don't get to stay comfortable, and for me that means eventually I don't get to stay sober. And first of all, there's a sobriety date. My sobriety date is February the 8th, 1976, which means I've been sober a little over 21 years. I know that applause is for Alcoholics Anonymous, because I wouldn't stay sober without that. It's not my first sobriety date, but it is my last one, and it will stay my last one as long as I continue to do on a daily basis the things I know to do today and that I do today, because no one ain't doing, so I need to take the actions. And I believe in complete physical sobriety. I know that sobriety is only where Alcoholics Anonymous begins. If I am not physically sober, it doesn't have a platform to take place and shape on. And so complete physical sobriety is very important to me. That means I don't drink near beer, I don't smoke near pot, I don't drop near acid. I don't do any near nothing, okay? And because I need to make sure it's real clean and clear. I need to keep it very, very clear. So I don't want to wonder ever when I'm taking a cake if I should have changed my sobriety date. I always want to have that above reproach and above question. But I also know for me, sobriety is only where it begins. It's not where it ends. This Alcoholics Anonymous was more than just about not drinking. So they should think that's all it was about. All I have to do is not drink and everything's just going to be wonderful. And it wasn't, because just not drinking, I drank again. Just said, okay, well then all I have to do is not drink for those meetings. And just doing that, I ended up drinking again. So I know I need to do those things, but there are a set of actions, a set of 12 steps that need to be taken in order for me to change on the inside too. And that was a big part that needed to be changed and brought up to date and things that we do here. So physical sobriety is where it begins, and if you are new here today and don't have a sobriety date, I encourage you to get one, because Alcoholics Anonymous makes a lot more sense when you're sober. And as I said, I believe in complete sobriety, because the last thing I ever took is I smoked one lousy joint. That's what my sobriety date is based on. The second and third thing are equally important to me, and that is a home group. I'm a member of the Flower Big Book group, and have been for the 11 years I've lived in California. Prior to that, I was a member of the Skyline Group in Atlanta, Georgia for almost 7 years. My original home group is the 12 and 12 group in Minneapolis for almost 4. I believe very strongly in a home group, because it's been in home group meetings that I have learned how to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned how to live here. I've learned things that I didn't even know were there to learn. I came to you, and you were basically working with a blank slate. You taught me how to be considerate of other people, because if it didn't involve me directly, it must not be very important. I was very self-absorbed. And you showed me how to be considerate of my neighbor, whether I'm sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and trying to be quiet and not bother them so they can listen if they want to, or being considerate out on the freeway, or being considerate in the market. You showed me how to have a little job in my meetings, how to learn to be one among many, to be of service in an anonymous way, not to always need to have credit and center of attention, which is something that I always enjoy as well. But you showed me how to keep that ego deflation continuous. You showed me by having a little job in my meeting made that meeting feel it was mine and part of me, and that it was important that I was there. Whether it felt like going or not was irrelevant, but I had a commitment to fulfill. And so having a little job in my meeting gave me that responsibility. It made me be accountable and show up whether I wanted to or not. In meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, she taught me how to become whatever I want to be. And I wanted to be a lady when I got here for a while. And so I found those kind of people and I started to hang around with them and do what they did. You showed me here how to be a friend. Not just to have people in my life, to use them. You showed me here how to be a better daughter, because I'm an only child, and you showed me here how to be a part of my parents' life and allow them to be a part of my life. You showed me here how to be a better employee, because you told me they really want you to show up every day. New colleagues, right? And so you showed me how to do that. You showed me here how to get married in Alcoholics Anonymous. Of course, you've also shown me how to get unmarried in Alcoholics Anonymous. And all these things, you showed me how you do them sober, and you showed me how to do the tough deals with a little bit of dignity and grace. And I'll tell you, I don't know how to do anything with a little bit of dignity and grace. I know how to do it like a three-year-old does it. I don't know how to do it like big people do. And you showed me how, because I've watched you walk through far bigger burdens and tragedies that I will ever know. And you did it sober. And you did it with dignity and grace. So when those have befallen on me, when those dark days have come along, I knew I could do that. I'm sure it must be this cold that's making me just a tad emotional here this morning. These women, they always do this to me. So having a home group has been a very, very important part of my life. And the third thing is a sponsor. At 21 years, I wouldn't dream of being without a sponsor. I've had three sponsors in my life because I've lived in three different states. And I prefer, you know, local sponsorship. And all of my sponsors have had a number of things in common. They've all been sober a good bit longer than me. If I wanted somebody who'd been sober to let me know I was going to live through these dark days that I've had. I want someone who was an activist in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want somebody who went to one meeting a month whether they needed to or not. I want somebody who was active and out there doing it, and all of my sponsors have been busier than me. In fact, I just had coffee this past Monday morning in Atlanta with my second sponsor. And as we left his home, he was on his way to a meeting that morning. He goes, still goes to five meetings a week. The third thing is probably one of the greatest attractions, and they're people that I want to be like when I grow up. Because they wear what Alcoholics Anonymous looks like when you live it as a way of life, not just 2 hours in a meeting. And they wear it so beautifully that I am willing to do what they do so I can have what they have. And this feels inclusive. It's not exclusive. If I'm willing to do the work, I can have those things. And what I saw in them, and still do, is they're standing still in their own skin, and I didn't know how you did that. They have a belief and a faith and a power and a greater than themselves. And I want that faith too. And they have life in their eyes. They have that twinkle, that sparkle, and these are people who are out and about. And that's what I wanted. And so I've done the things they've done. And what are those? Very simply, take the steps, practice the principles in all my affairs, and apply the traditions in my life. And that's what I've been able to have most of the time as well. Sometimes when I'm uncomfortable is usually because I'm trying to run the show somehow. I'm trying to do that stuff well again. And it really does run riot in my life. But those three things, if you hear nothing else today, I hope that if you are new, or maybe you've been around here a while and are a little bit of restless, irritable, discontent, and you don't have one or all three of these things in your life in an active state, a sobriety date that's without question and clean and clear, a home group that you're an active member in, and a sponsor that you're working with. If you don't have those, I hope that you'll get them and activate them. Because I want you to know this, that if you be an alcoholic, I have a solution for you here. In the steps, traditions, and principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that I know that by having those things in my life, I have been able to stay sober. Now, there's a lot of other things that follow under that umbrella of those three things. But those three things seem to be the gel that make it all happen. And that you don't have to keep living this way anymore if you don't want to, because we do offer you a solution. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous this last time, lots and lots of well-meaning people, I think, have tried to get the message to me that you have done. I mean, I've been prayed for and written to and preached to, lectured by, counseled by all kinds of wonderful, well-meaning people. Judges, principals, employers, family members, police, hospital psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors. They all meant well. I've been punished, rewarded, sent away, brought back, given to, taken away from. You know, they all tried in their own way. But you see, when I came to you, y'all speak the language of the heart. And the heart talks to the heart. And you spoke a language I understood. You talked about things down here that I had heard before. So I welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope, and I know that you can find here a peace and a comfort and a happiness you have never known before if you take these steps. Half measures availed me nothing. I've tried that, so I know that really isn't an option anymore. So I welcome you. Well, everybody has a story, and this one is mine. The very edited version. I took my first drink when I was 12 years old. It was a Friday the 13th. I've loved Fridays ever since. Drunk or sober, they're my favorite day of the week. It was April of 1970. I was 12 years old when I took my first drink. As I said, that makes me 40 today, so we get all the numbers out of the way. And I took that first drink because I wanted to be accepted by the cool kids in school, and they had invited me to this party earlier in the week. When I arrived, I had already made a very conscious decision that I'm going to get drunk. Now, I don't know how you get drunk. I've never seen anybody drunk. I surmise that you probably have to drink a whole bunch, but I looked at this night as my debut. This was my one and only shot of being accepted by this group of kids. And I didn't come from a family of problem drinking at all. It was a very kind and loving family. I've never seen my parents drunk to this day. There is no identified alcoholism in my family. If there is, it literally is buried. I have tried. I can't find anybody. I'm it. I need a family. And so when I began to drink, I had no idea the effect that it would have on me. I'm 12 years old, and it's very, very normal to want to have a little group of friends that you run around and giggle with and pass notes in school. But what I don't know is that when I take a drink, something abnormal happens. I don't know that. I hear them talk about drinking, and that's what I'm going to do. I don't hear them talk about getting drunk, but that's what I'm going to do. And as we all gathered up that night, I would set the pattern of my drinking for me. When we started about 6 o'clock, and I don't really kind of know what to do, so I'm just kind of watching what protocol seems to be, and they're passing the bottle around. And from the very beginning, I've never drank like my parents. They're the kind of people that we call them social drinkers. They're the kind that they have one drink that lasts all night long, and it's got ice and mix and junk in it, you know. And I'm the kind that I have a bottle all night. They're the kind of people that when they open a fresh bottle of whiskey, they keep the cap. I just pick it. I'll never need it again. And so I've never seen them take a bottle of anything and put it up to their mouth and take a drink, and that's how I took my first one. And that bottle came around, and I did what they all did, and I took a pull off of that bottle, and I gave it to the next person. It's going down my throat. It's burning. I like that. Something's happening here. This is a good sign. A few seconds later, when it hit bottom, it was like hot lava. It was warm, and it moved, and it filled in every empty space there was. and I didn't even know I had any. I didn't come to here to take that drink because I felt weird or out of place. I just simply wanted to do what they were doing. And I liked this feeling. You know, and that softened those sharp edges I didn't even know I had. And I'm 12 years old when I take that first drink, and 2 inches behind my belly button is a very warm glow. So I'm thinking, you know, oatmeal never did this. And I like this. And I believe what makes me an alcoholic is what happened when I took the second drink. I don't believe I'm an alcoholic because I drink too much. What's too much? That always, when I hear that, I always think about some kind of a quantity minimum. I don't believe I'm an alcoholic because I, the length of time I did or did not drink. Mine was very accelerated in a very short period of time. I went very, very fast down the road. I believe I'm an alcoholic because there's a statement in the doctor's opinion that says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And that's exactly what happened to me, and I didn't know it. But when that bottle came around the second time, I did exactly the same thing I did the first time. I took a pull off that bottle and I gave it to the next guy. But what happened was unknown to me. As I'm going down, I'm nervous. And, you know, I want to be accepted by this group of kids. And I just, you know, I hope the hair is okay. You know, I hope nothing goes wrong tonight. And by the time I hit bottom, that anxiety turned into arrogance. And I sort of sat a little straighter in that chair. I began to take a look around that room. And I thought, hey, aren't they glad I'm here? You know? I have an almost instant change of perception. And I took the first thing because I want to be accepted by the group of kids, and I took the second thing and everything I'm going to do for the next 6 years because I like the effect produced by alcohol. You see, I don't know that what I have happened to me when I take a drink of alcohol has never happened to my grandmother. She hasn't had a drink in over 21 years either, but you know what? She doesn't care. She doesn't take cake. She didn't pay attention to it. She didn't like the tingly feeling it gives her. You know. And we hit it full pedal, you know. Well, that's where we're going now. That first night set my drinking pattern for me. I would drink fast as much as I could, whatever I could. I would black out, I passed out, I came to as my first case of the dry heaves. All those things I already in a minute rationalized away why they are not a negative consequence of drinking. Wanted to go back to the party they drug me away from. Wouldn't take me back, but I couldn't wait to do it again. That morning, that Friday morning, had been important to me to be a good daughter, be a good student, stay out of trouble, do right. That slipped a notch. Because the first thing on my mind that night, when I came to, was how can I drink again? And I don't know that's a little odd. I don't know that at all. It just became very instinctive. I am not known for my common sense, and I definitely know that, and I'm naive in a lot of areas of life. However, when it came to drinking, everything seemed to be instinctive. It was as natural to me to do the things I did as breathing. I never gave it a second thought for the next 6 years. I never had a regret. I never looked back. I never gave anything a second thought what I was going to do or say to get that drink. And I never knew that was any big deal. It just was instant. That night I also feel that I activated that mental obsession we have because drinking was the first thing on my mind. And I also feel that I activated that physical craving. I've never had a couple drinks, never even told you I've had a couple drinks, never wanted to have a couple drinks. I'm always in it for the drunk. I'm not in it for the tease. And so that began my drinking career. I'm mainly on weekends I'm drinking, and about a year later I'm introduced to the wonderful world of drugs, which in my particular case allowed me to stay conscious longer before that inevitable blackout. I'm a blackout drinker because I drink whiskey out of a bottle with a beer chaser. I'm 13 years old and I've been doing this already for several months, and that's the way I like to drink. I'm not interested in drinks with fruit and umbrellas and all that crap in them. I want to get there and I want to get there now. I don't think about do I like the taste of whiskey or donut. I just loved it. It didn't matter. But I tended to black out too quickly, so I found things to help keep me awake. Things like speed and acid will help you. They became my newfound pals, and we began this journey for the next several years. In the last year and a half of my drinking on a daily basis anyway, with rarely an exception, was a bottle of whiskey and a hit or two of acid. and that's the way that I lived, and I didn't think anything odd or unusual about that lifestyle at all, or the problems and consequences that I was causing everybody around me. However, my father did have a problem with my lifestyle. They do interfere sometimes, and he sought professional advice because he did not know what to do. All his human power had failed, and so he sought professional advice, and they suggested that he commit me to a hospital for alcoholism and drug addiction, and that's what he did. I'm 17 years old, and I went to a hospital for that in May of 1975. I got there on a Friday. Lots of things happened to me on Saturday. I had my first drink, and I'm introduced to you on a Friday, and as a result of being in this particular treatment center, I learned things. I didn't know. I never heard the word alcoholic. Never heard about alcoholism or Alcoholics Anonymous. Why would I seek out that? I don't have a problem with drinking. Everybody seems to think I do, but I don't. And I would be, I'd be educated about this thing, and I would hear things like, I lost my family because of drinking. And I could rationalize why my case was different. But in my own small way, I could find remotely, of course, that identity. And then when I heard you say things like, I lost my family because of drinking, I thought, you got a good deal. I want to lose my family. You know? They are a constant source of irritation to me. You talked about totaling out cars. And I have never totaled out a car officially. I was, you know, I certainly have a little drunk car that came down called Snows, but I was the designated drunken driver of my group. I didn't trust anybody else's drunk driving, and only my own. And whenever I would have a vehicular mishap, it was always alone. So I didn't think that to be any problem, but I didn't have drunk driving charges because I worked for the city judge. And I knew all the police, and they knew me, and they'd send me home. I heard y'all talk about jails and prisons and institutions you've been in. Well, I have, you can look around any room of alcoholics rooms, and I've been serious criminals in these rooms, and I thought, that does not apply to me, because I have only been in jail 3 times, and every time, it was a misunderstanding, you know, they don't count. And you talked about losing jobs, and I had been fired from a few, and I had been asked to quit from a few, but I had developed, especially in that last year, a bad habit of quitting in blackouts. The problem, when you go in the next day, it's very difficult to explain, you know? Then I heard you say 2 things that really bothered me, and one was all those broken promises. Oh, God, that was a knife in the heart because I've been able to keep one since I was 12 years old and took my first drink because all was part of the promise was be good, and that meant don't drink or take any drugs, and I couldn't do that. Another thing was there was a woman who talked about trying to scrub away the smell, and she said that was booze coming through her pores. And it frightened me because I've never blamed alcohol or drugs for anything that happened in my life, but I've had this funny odor for quite some time, and I don't know what it is. But I know that she knows what that smell smells like. And it terrified me that I might be one of those people. I'd be sent to an all-women halfway house. That was my first introduction to all of you, and I wasn't interested. I really did not have a very open attitude about anything regarding women, and if it had been all men or co-ed, I would have much preferred that, but it was an all-women's halfway house, and they thought that would be very good for me, and I, you know, matter of opinion, and as a result of that, I would be there 7 months and do 1 meeting a month, because that was what we was required. That was all I was going to do. I'm not going to do a fraction more than I have to. Then I came to San Jose to visit my mother, and I was there 2.5 weeks. First week, I'm miserable because I'm hanging out with people I used to drink with. Last week and a half, I'm drunk and loaded with them. I came back to Minneapolis, set my meetings up from 1 a month to 1 a week. Sounds like a lot of meetings to me when you don't want to do anything but just not drink and go to those meetings. You're running your own life, don't have a sponsor, and you are going to be in serious trouble. And finally, after 5 weeks, I got a letter in the mail with one lousy joint in it. That was on a Friday, too. And like any sober committed alcoholic, I decided to keep it because I thought, you know, you never know when you might need something like this. And you know, I'll tell you, it was amazing. I needed it the next day, you know. big surprise, right? Yeah. And so I smoked that one though. It's really, that was the last thing I've had to this day, because for me, it was over. On the inside, I've been exposed to way too long. I had acquired this thing called a conscience, and I had absolutely my interest in living was over now. Because I don't want to keep living anymore on the inside if this is the way it's going to be. And I knew those people in Alcoholics Anonymous lived a different way. And for me that night, I was 18 years old when I got sober. And let me tell you, it was not my design ever to be sober. It was not in my thought a future that I would ever live beyond 30. And I did not care. That did not matter to me. I'm going out with a party was my attitude. And you see, that night, it was necessary to have the things happen that did. I firmly believe that for me, that surrender came, and every mental option was removed. My age was the big deal of the time. I'm 18, and just a few weeks before, that had been a big deal. And now it no longer matters. I just cannot stand living the way I'm living. The next day was the 8th of February, and that's when I take my sobriety date. Now, I feel that I was given that spiritual kit of tools that night, but no matter how young or old we are when we get here, it is my responsibility, like everybody else's, to pick them up and to take the actions. You know, if doing today at 21 years of sobriety, what I do today is still vitally important. I want to be an example of somebody who's lived this way for 21 years, not 21 minutes. I'm going to be an example of that change happens and continues to happen. You continue to feel better inside, but you continue to get a relationship with the God of your understanding at 21 years and be an example of that. That's really important to me. Because I look ahead to the people who are sober longer than me. And I still see them very human, but I still see them getting softer and the edges aren't so sharp anymore. And so I went to those old timers of Alcoholics Anonymous because I knew that they knew. I said, what do you do to stay sober? They said, well, first of all, we don't take a drink for anything else that affects us from the neck up one day at a time. We're regular meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, we get a home group, we get a sponsor, we get a guide of understanding, we take these steps, practice the principles, apply the traditions, try to be of service and carry this message. And that's what I've tried to do. I haven't added anything to that. I have to keep my life extraordinarily simple. I have one sobriety day, I have one home group. I go thousands of meetings with my wife, but I only have one home group that gets more of everything of me. And I have one sponsor. And that, I need to keep it very, very simple because I can complicate a paperclip, okay? I have never, in 21 years, I have not needed to go anywhere else for a solution to my problem. I feel so thankful and grateful that I have found them in the steps, principles, and traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so thankful for that. I began this journey, and in my first 4 years, I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or service commitments and prayed every single night. I got a sponsor, and I began to study the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I first came in here, I felt that I was maybe illiterate or something. I wasn't, but I had no retention for the first few years of my sobriety. I couldn't, you know, it was like a sleeping pill. You'd start reading it and boom, you were out. You know, I couldn't remember a paragraph I had just read. And this sponsor began to help me study the book instead of read it. And it totally gained dimension to me, and I've been a student ever since. I moved to Atlanta a few weeks from my fourth birthday, and I got a sponsor, I got a home group, and I guess I thought I knew something. I'm 4 years sober, and I've decided how many meetings a week I'm going to go to is 2 or 3. And I'll tell you, when you go from 7 to 2 or 3, it becomes 2. I was going the short end of the deal when I'm running my life. And what happened is I got sort of a mindset in 2 meetings a week became like this box. But what happened is one day at a time, when I'm doing the barest to bare minimum to stay in, I start shaving it. And how I shave it down is, as I in my home group meeting, I get there an hour before the meeting. And for the next 2 years, from 4 to 6, that hour is getting shorter and shorter. To the point where I know I can't come in late, but I get there 5 minutes before the meeting, more time to my colleagues sit down. So that's all you have time for. You don't have time for fellowship or anything like that. Welcoming newcomers, work in the room. And same with leaving. for the next, from 4 to 6 years, I'm still where the very last to leave my home group. And that time's getting shorter and shorter to the point I know where I can't leave or, you know, leave before the meeting is over. But by God, you go, amen, shake, shake, and you're looking at taillight. I'm out of there. And I'm wondering why I'm so restless, irritable, and discontent when I turned 6 years sober. And I was insanity waiting to happen. And finally, on Friday night, I met him. And I thought this was my solution, and it all looked real fine, including the fact that he had 13 years of sobriety, and he hadn't been to a meeting in 3 years, but no problem. I'm going to help him. And that poor little soul never knew what hit him. I was going to help him and get him into AA again and just get wonderful. And it was the worst of our sobriety to date, and I know about what insanity is. I know what about obsession is here, whether it be with men, women, parents, pets, children, possessions. It's a very dangerous thing in Alcoholics Anonymous and sobriety. And I hope that if this is happening in your life now, that you do not leave. Stay very, very close to us. Because I want you to know that you can live through this a day at a time, one event at a time, without taking a drink to get better. This is where the relief and the solution is. It's not out there in a drink. And after 3 months of this turbulent and whirlwind romance, of which I was the only one involved, somebody else has had one of those, I guess. Got through a roadblock and kind of got my attention when the guy got married to somebody else. So we've had a few of those in life, and at 6.5 years, it thankfully, mercifully came crashing down. There was another huge emotional surrender, the biggest, second biggest one other than the very first one. And I began taking these steps again because, you see, I know I'm an alcoholic and I only got two avenues of relief. Drink, which no longer was an option or worked for me anymore, or recommit myself to Alcoholics Anonymous 110%. 100's not going to cut it. I need that cushion of 10% just to stay even with you. I've journeyed through Alcoholics Anonymous. I've certainly had highs and lows. I was 8.5 years sober when the man talked at my home group meeting about being just a twinge restless, irritable, and discontent. He said, you know what, I realized I'm trying to live the day on last year's program. And I realized that's what I've been doing. It taught me a different way of thinking about one day at a time. This is the day that I have. This is the day that I'm here with you. I don't know why, who cares, doesn't matter. This is the day that we booked. And, you know, this is the day that I get to make a contribution and try to be of service in the areas that I am. And I have gotten married, and I have had a divorce in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had some very dark, dark days. And I know what it's like to be extremely busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. Active, working with a lot of women, sharing a lot in meetings, going to lots of meetings, working full time. I don't know how much busy I can get, and yet I can't outrun the pain. I've tried to many times, but I can't outrun the pain. Sometimes we just have to sit there and go through it. But I know that I'm not alone, and I only have to do it for the moment, and it's going to get better. I know what it's like to be sober a long time, active, and in such great despair and crying hysterically and just out of it in a way, and you say, you know what, you can do this for about another half hour, and then you got to clean yourself up, put yourself together, because you have to agree to the meeting tonight. I know what it's like to be literally on the edge of your mental sanity, and if somebody just goes, you're over. I know the delicate balance, but I also know my solution has always been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have always stayed close to you, whether I wanted to or not. It wasn't an option. They had told me you go to meetings no matter what. That means I don't get a vacation from meetings, whether I feel good or don't feel good, whether I'm up to it or not, whether there's a good movie on or not. That's not an option. I don't get vacations from being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't ever want to take a vacation from it. This is my life. Don't show me a way of life I didn't even know existed. And if it did, it wouldn't be for anybody like me. And today, it's the only way that I want to live. So, for me, to be, hopefully make a contribution to your Women's Day. I thank you, but mostly for letting me participate in my own sobriety. Thank you. Thank you.